with over 25 years of experience integrating mental health and spirituality, the author of Reclaiming Authenticity, When Ancestors Weep, and Redeeming the Bereaved. Here is Dr. James Hauck.
Right. Good evening, everybody, wherever you are in the world at this time. Welcome to Reclaiming Authenticity, helping you find your courage to reclaim that which has always been in you. In fact, helping you reclaim that which you have always been and who you are. Very excited to be with you here tonight and every other Wednesday evening at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 6 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. Each and every week, these broadcasts are dedicated to the integration of spirituality and our mental health, and I place all of this within the context of our relationships with ourselves, with each other, and certainly with God or the divine. I'm Dr. James Hauck, and if you would like more information about me, or maybe you want to leave me your comments about tonight's show, I invite you to visit the websites. It's www.bbsradio.com/reclaiming authenticity. And the other website is www.reclaiming-authenticity.com. And if you would like to call in and be part of the show or call in with any insights or questions or just general conversation on tonight's topic, I invite you to call the toll-free number. That is 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008. And I'll certainly be taking your calls after the break. Now, just in case you cannot spend the entire hour with me this evening, these broadcasts are podcasted. So you can go back and listen again, or you can go back into the archives and listen to previous shows. And these podcasts, I'm happy to announce, are also available for download on iTunes, Audible, and Amazon Music, as well as this show also replays on WNEW 102.7 FM in New York on the weekends. And just want to add a personal milestone before we begin tonight. I just wanted to share with everybody that this broadcast, this particular one right here, beginning in July, ushers in my sixth year with BBS Radio. And what a ride it has been. You know, where is the time gone? So I look forward to seeing what year six will bring indeed. And, you know, when I started this series, you know, 6 years ago, I wanted to really emphasize the integration of spirituality and our mental health. And this was something that, you know, was just very unique and just something I really wanted to do because I saw such a great need to be able to do this. Because one thing's for certain, I have not only seen through these broadcasts, but also throughout my clinical practice, is that there's a growing awareness and a hunger for the need for people to integrate their mental health with their spirituality. And this integration has had a very long history. And I just want to give a quick shout out to the one individual who has influenced me on this topic and the seriousness of having an integration of spirituality and mental health. And that is one Dr. Harold Koenig. He's the director for the Center of Spirituality and Theology and Health, as well as the professor of psychiatry and behavioral sciences. And he wrote a review back in 2008, I think it was, in the Canadian Journal of Psychiatry. He also wrote that there are many ways in which one's religious and spiritual beliefs and practices may be important resources for coping with illness. And certainly, you know, his research shown that there was a connection between one's beliefs and one's sense of well-being, such as your positive beliefs or how your religious and spiritual beliefs brought you comfort and inner strength gained from your religion or spirituality, and meditation and prayer. And that's just to name a few. Now, improving your spiritual health may not cure an illness, but it will help your overall well-being. I am certainly convinced of that. Because you may feel a higher sense of purpose and peace and hope and meaning. And you just also may experience, more self-confidence or greater self-esteem and more self-control. And again, just to mention a few. So there are many positive outcomes related to the integration of our mental health and our spirituality. And this is where I come in, because I have a keen interest in helping people live authentic lives by helping them find their courage to be able to reclaim that which has always been in them and who they always have been and are as a soul. Because, and if you followed me for some time, you know that I have a very solid belief, very solid, that all of us come into this world already equipped and graced with everything that we need for in this life, in terms of our giftedness, or our skills, and our talents, and our strengths, and our character traits, and so on and so forth. And how we live out our, let's say, our giftedness and our talents and strengths is in and through various relationships. These relationships could be personal, they could be professional, but the common denominator, if you will, are the relationships. And this is a very important aspect when considering who we are, because although we may have similar gifts and skills and talents and strengths and character traits and so forth, no two people express these identically. In other words, each of us has a thisness about them that cannot be duplicated, you know, and people try and imitate how other people do things, but really no one has the ability to be able to duplicate us, because within us and who we are at our core as a soul is what the 12th century scholar John Duns Scotus referred to as hachaitas. It's a thisness, a uniqueness, if you will. And this is a pretty abstract comment, so I try to explain this to kids in terms of a thumbprint, you know, that we all have a thumbprint. We all have our gifts and graces and skills and strengths and so forth, but just as no two thumbprints are alike, no two people have the same thisness. There's a uniqueness to each and every person. And they really latch onto that because, you know, the kids and the teenagers, you know, that I counsel, they're looking for something special to identify in themselves and who they are. Because by the time I get them, they may have been told all kinds of things, you know, negative things and derogatory things about them, just coming from other people who are just wounded emotionally, and how that wounding often sticks with these kids. But to help a child, help a teenager, an adolescent, help anybody at any time understand their hachaitas, their uniqueness. Okay? And therein lies this importance of the realization of who we truly are. We are unique. We are that unique soul. We have that thisness about us. Well, welcome to tonight's show. Kind of interesting. I had fun coming up with a title for this one, but the title is Thanksgiving in July, 5D Gratitude, or Living in Fifth Dimension Gratitude. Well, as strange as it may sound, you know, would you believe that for the past several weeks, you know, I've been having lots of interesting conversations out there with people who are already concerned about celebrating Thanksgiving. I mean, can you believe it? You know, I know, so say it ain't so, but it's true. Now, we all heard of Christmas in July sales and you know, this is, you know, everything's going on like that, you know, no problem. Christmas in July, we're kind of used to that. But, you know, again, what does Thanksgiving have to do with fireworks? I mean, here we are, you know, just 2 days into July, and in 2 days, we're going to be celebrating the 4th of July with lots of fireworks. So what does Thanksgiving have to do with fireworks? Well, plenty. Now, I don't recommend rolling out an entire Thanksgiving meal on your blanket on the lawn to watch fireworks on the 4th. I mean, it's bad enough that the cranberry sauce oozes out all over your plate and mixes with your turkey and mashed potatoes and green beans and stuffing on Thanksgiving Day. But could you imagine what would happen if you turn that cranberry sauce loose, or free from its can in this heat? I mean, you'd be drinking the cranberry instead of eating it. Well, anyway, think back to last year's fireworks in many homes on Thanksgiving. Oh, yeah, you've heard it correctly. You think the fireworks were explosive on the fourth? I mean, imagine there were just as many fireworks and explosive arguments going on in many homes in November. And I'm convinced, I have a theory that gets proven every year, and I really wish it wouldn't, but it comes around. I just like, there it is. I'm convinced that the reason for this chaos and fighting on Thanksgiving is because nothing had been resolved from previous Thanksgivings. Yeah, think about it. What was never resolved on one Thanksgiving is just carried on, throughout the entire year, through other holidays. You have Christmas, you have New Year's, then you have Valentine's Day, and then you have Easter, and all the other celebrations, the 4th of July, you have Labor Day, you have, Halloween, and so on and so forth, until it rolls around again to another Thanksgiving. And all it takes is for one person at the dinner table to say something like this: "Hey, that's your third biscuit. That diet you're on must be really working." And then, boom, there goes the fireworks. Okay. And again, another like side theory on this is I'm convinced this is why we have Friendsgiving on the Friday after Thanksgiving. Families, you gotta love them. Or can you? Well, let's jump into the Wayback Machine, let's say, to the early mid-1900s, when a German psychoanalyst named Karen Horney developed a theory of personality that emphasized the role of, say, social and cultural factors, especially childhood experiences, within the role of social and cultural factors that really help shape personality and how it contributes to neurosis, or back in her day, that's what it was called, but it's really mental health issues, especially how it contributes to one's approach to relationships. Now, Dr. Horney proposed that basic anxiety, okay, just your basic run-of-the-mill anxiety, okay, and all the degrees in between, really stemmed from feelings of isolation and insecurity in childhood. And this led individuals to manage their anxiety in one of three ways, or as she referred to it, as relational movements. And, she said, most of the time people either move toward another, or move against another, or move away from another. And I love this direction language that she uses to just how people cope with their anxiety, but she puts it in terms of relationships. So the first one, moving toward people, this is basically compliance, that individuals with this kind of trend seek, let's just say, safety and acceptance by being overly compliant and dependent on others. And, they might even prioritize pleasing others and avoiding conflict. Moving toward people. The second one is moving against people. This is more like aggression. And this trend involves a very hostile and domineering approach to relationships. And it's driven by the belief that the world is a very competitive and a threatening place. And individuals with this particular kind of trend may seek to control and manipulate others. And so that's moving against people. Now, the third, or moving away from people, is more, it takes on the flavor of more of becoming detached, where individuals with this trend seek emotional distance and independence, often preferring solitude, and they avoid intimacy because they fear vulnerability and potential, the potential for pain in relationships. And as a result, her theory led people to look at culture and norms and attitudes in which they lived and how these have contributed to the increased anxiety in relationships. And, you know, in the early 1900s, you know, this was very cutting edge for her day, as well as, you know, this was a huge departure from Freud's theories at that time. Well, I want to put a little twist on Horney's theories by adding one little focus, which makes it possible for you to grow beyond your insecurities and fears and hostilities and embrace your value, dignity, and worth, regardless of culture, norms, and attitudes. So in other words, remembering who you are. You know, I had a client one time who was a carpenter all his life, and he was highly skilled and very proud of his work. When I met with him, he even brought in pictures. I mean, he was just a finished cabinet carpenter. I mean, just beautiful, beautiful work. And when he introduced himself, he identified with his profession. And so he said, "Hi, I'm Roger. I'm a carpenter." And throughout our sessions, he would use various carpentry terminology, such as when he described himself, he would say things like, "Well, you know, I've always measured my life against the plumb line of what was expected of me. And sometimes it just doesn't pay to cut across the grain." And, you know, the more he talked about his life in this carpentry language, the more I kept wondering if he knew anything else, let alone, did he really know who he was? So one session, we got on the subject of how he would like to be remembered, how he would like to sum up his life, you know, and what is the one thing that he would like others to know about him apart from his life as a carpenter? Well, that question nearly floored him, no pun intended. Okay? He didn't know how to answer that question because he never asked that question about himself. And it took us a long time, several weeks, to work through that particular question because for Roger, he felt as if he would ever find his true self, he would be disappointing and betraying his family promises and vows of always working with his hands to put food on the table, which is a noble profession. But discovering who we are is really not the same thing as how we live that out on a daily basis. I mean, one flows from the other, but you have to begin with, who am I? Well, in his work, The Analysis of the Self, I think it was published early 70s, 70, 71, another psychologist, Heinz Kohut, he defined the self as a person's psychological well-being, you know, which consisted of sensations and feelings and thoughts and attitudes towards oneself, as well as the world. Now, according to his model of self-psychology, Kohut understood our inability to overcome many issues in our lives as stemming from an underdeveloped sense of who we are. In other words, we don't know who we are. And so we're going to have a very, very limited view of that. And subsequently, it's going to affect our relationships. It's going to affect our lives. Because not only are we not, you know, simply aware of who we are, but also we are not aware of what inner gifts and beauty and strengths we possess. I mean, external objects in our lives have been substituted for what we really desire in relationships. That love, that acceptance, that peace, that intimacy, that nurturing, courage, and so on and so forth. So, for example, in order to develop a healthy self, according to Kohut, you know, we just have to internalize the qualities of, let's say, external objects in our lives. So again, you know, if, let's say we grew up with a favorite stuffed animal or a toy. Well, we learned the value of the comfort and the fun and the companionship that that toy provided. Then the reason why these external objects, or let's say the toy, connect with us is because they really meet this inner emotional and psychological need. However, although this is normal behavior in childhood, I mean, we see kids all the times with blankets and toys and stuffed animals. It's cute and everything. But as we mature, you know, we internalize these qualities and now substitute that stuffed animal or that toy for more meaningful mental, emotional, physical, sexual, and spiritual intimacy in relationship with other people. And unfortunately, if we're unable to do this, we're going to struggle to reciprocate these human qualities in very meaningful, life-giving ways. Now, one of my favorite contemporary examples of this struggle that people face in moving from an underdeveloped sense of self toward a healthy self actually comes from the movie Ted. And it has some mileage on it. It came out in 2012. But in this film, you know, John Bennett, that was the character's name. He was a 35-year-old man child who received his childhood wish in making his teddy bear, or Ted, come to life. And nobody knew what was going on, but John knew. So John and Ted kind of had like this little secret going on. And growing up, Ted served as a great companion and a confidant and unconditional love for John. Well, unfortunately, John never internalized these qualities that he received from Ted, this object, this stuffed animal. And thus, he struggled to find meaning in his relationships, especially with his girlfriend, Lori, without Ted always being around. And, you know, as the movie goes, you know, Lori wanted to spend some alone time with John, her boyfriend, but Ted was always around. And, you know, she's like, I can't do this anymore. I just can't. I can't compete with Ted. And, you know, many people also look at external objects in order to satisfy these inner stirrings of the soul. Now, whether they're objects that provide pleasure or happiness or comfort, security, and or peace, they can never really touch the cry of the soul or the soul consciousness that connects us with God. Because these objects are simply poor substitutes that on one level, they serve to meet an emotional and or physical needs. However, the reason why we cling to external objects is because on one level, they work. And another example, say a more adult example, is let's just say alcohol. Okay, alcohol is a depressant and it calms, you know, one's emotional anxiety and stress. It works. Cocaine is another good example. Cocaine's a stimulant, and it boosts mental and physical energy. And the sexual organs release dopamine in the brain and provide a physiological sense of elation. And even a lengthy workout releases endorphins and provides us with a kind of euphoric, analgesic feeling. Yet on the other hand, if we truly, truly want to understand ourselves as souls, we have to learn that these external objects should always be pointing us to connect with a higher consciousness that transcends our emotional, psychological, and physical realms. In fact, as we listen to the cry of our own soul, we realize our deepest desire is to connect and reconnect to the pure sense of who we are. Moreover, this cry of our soul is so powerful, so deafening at times, that once we fully embrace ourselves, we're never going to be satisfied with anything less. But when we discover our authentic self and we start living as an authentic self, we assume then that our authenticity should shield us from negative reactions from others. And, you know, but this is to be expected at times because along with authenticity also comes authentic energy. And this energy will create an effect in other people. Some people will be drawn to it. Some people will not. But regardless, when you no longer need an emotional or psychological or a spiritual external factor, your authentic self will no longer be affected by the opinions or the reactions of others. And when you cannot affect your authentic self, well, it may not always go so well. We've seen this many times in family dynamics when one member begins to change and other people in the family scramble to kind of counterbalance the energy or the effect, or they struggle to maintain the dysfunction that they grew accustomed to because they're so used to it. They may not like it, but they've just grown accustomed to it. You know, they may feel intimidated because of what authenticity demands of them. They might be extremely disappointed. They might even feel betrayed or hurt or rejected by the one in the family who is changing. And so our fullest potential and the realization of our fullest potential is really waiting for us. But what gets in the way of that? Why can't we just easily access that? Well, put it very simply, what gets in the way of that is our ego, our pride, our arrogance, our unforgiveness, our anger, our rage, our wounds. And, you know, just we have to ask to be forgiven at times, and we have to forgive others and to release these wounds that we've carried for so long, and as well as be released from deep-seated burdens, released from guilt, and released, you know, from the shame imposed on you by society or family, and even be released from family secrets that you vowed to carry. And perhaps maybe you have said at some point in your life that I'll never trust another person, or I'm never going to forgive that person. And we realize that we've just ended up cementing ourselves in a casket of bitterness. So how do we release ourselves from these beliefs that no longer serve us? Well, we have to begin by perhaps understanding the origins of where these beliefs and perspectives come from in the first place. So I would really love to hear what's on your heart about this subject. So if you want to call in, again, that number is 888-627-6008. And I'm going to be taking your calls after the break. Again, you are listening to Reclaiming Authenticity, and I'm your host, Dr. James Houck. I'll be back with you in 1 minute. Welcome back. Again, I am Dr. James Houck, and you are listening to Reclaiming Authenticity. Well, earlier in the show, the first half of the show, I mentioned the connection, kind of the ironic connection between fireworks that we'll be celebrating on the 4th of July and Thanksgiving. And just think back, you know, to last year's fireworks, the emotional fireworks in your home or other people's homes that you visited on Thanksgiving. And yes, it's true, you know, fireworks and Thanksgiving, kind of a strange combination, but, you know, fireworks and the explosions around fireworks are not just for the 4th of July. And I imagine that there were just as many fireworks and explosive arguments going on in many homes in November. And again, I shared my theory in the first half of the show that I'm convinced that the reason for this chaos and fighting on Thanksgiving was because nothing had been resolved from previous Thanksgiving. So how do you resolve these interpersonal issues, let alone live your life from the realization of who you are as a soul? You know, I still hear a lot of talk out there about spiritual growth, regarding wanting to find the magic key that unlocks all of your answers to happiness and peace and joy, which usually involves sending a check-in or putting it on a credit card. Kind of interesting how that goes hand in hand. But anyway, there also seems to be much talk out there regarding improving one's relationships and taking on something better, but not having to put in the spiritual work along the way. It's almost as if people want it to have it handed to them, or, you know, they want to take a pill and like, hey, it's all good. You know, all my problems are solved. No problem. Now I have depth in my spirituality and so on and so forth. Well, quite frankly, you know, I don't mean to be glib about this, but if you have this hunger for something more in your spiritual life, or at times you feel as though there's this growing sense of, you know, I just don't fit with society's norms and values and customs. I just can't relate to that anymore. You know, you're not too far off. You know, certainly having a desire to be more in your life and discovering who you are as a soul and learning to live in this world as a soul are very good stirrings that you should not ignore. I mean, take them seriously, because these promptings, I believe, God nudging us, that it's time to shift into the higher vibrational energies with your soul awareness. Because I'm convinced that many people crave, or I love how it's put, you know, people have an ache in their soul to have a deeper connection to something beyond the physical world. But they don't really know how to start looking for the things to satisfy their desires. In fact, many people will look outside themselves to satisfy their inner cravings for deep connections and greater soul vibrational awareness. Well, in a nutshell, don't do this. Don't look outside yourself, because I don't care who you are. No one has ever satisfied the question of, at my core, who am I? By filling their lives with material things. In fact, finding yourself, let's just say, is not a matter of taking on more things, but rather, it's about realizing that most of our lives are being spent living from a very limited awareness, or third dimension, okay, if you will, that keeps us from realizing the fullness of being a soul. Because these dimensions, like third dimension, fourth dimension, fifth dimension, six, seven, eight, but there's just lots of dimensions. These dimensions are not actual places, but rather they're states of consciousness, the way of being. And, you know, the third dimensional consciousness, let's say, is viewing things from a purely physical state. Okay, and this is where most of us live. You know, this is our day in and day out activities, the world in which we are born into. And, you know, we have an education, we grow up, and, you know, we live our lives, we find a partner, we get married, we have children or not, or, you know, and then we die. That's all third dimensional thinking, okay? Very, very limited. Because in raising your vibrational awareness or raising your vibrational consciousness is about transforming and letting go of negative attachments to things, you know, such as, you know, greed and lust and unforgiveness and bitterness. And third dimension also refers to how we experience ourselves through our physical senses, and believing that what we see and hear and taste and touch, you know, and so forth, is the end-all be-all of our existence. That there's so much more. You know, as I've shared many times on this broadcast, it's like what we take in through our senses, you know, that's the brain. But our minds come in really quickly, and we start to interpret what we see and hear and smell and taste and touch. And we think that's our reality. On one level, a very limited level, okay? But there's so much more beyond all of this, okay? And also, you know, this transformation also needs to occur regarding how we understand our time and space, or the fact that we feel that we may be separated from each other, or have this kind of duality in mind, you know, where there's good versus evil or light versus dark. And we often focus on the physical body and survival and what do we need to do to keep the body going and so on and so forth, okay? But again, there's more to us than the body. There's more to us than what the mind is interpreting, you know? We also need to transform our linear thinking, you know, let's just say of seeing things from strictly a past, present, and future perspective. Or we need to transform our rigid beliefs and limited perspectives where our relationships are often driven by our ego or our fears or a sense of dominance and separation from others. Again, that's all survival language. That's all third dimensional language. Now, I get it. At this point, you just might be asking yourself, come on, is it really that important to increase my vibrational awareness and my vibrational consciousness as a soul in order to realize the fullness of who I am as a soul? Well, let me ask you this. How many more times do you want to keep bringing your emotional fireworks to Thanksgiving? Not to mention the other holidays. How many more times do you want to live in an endless cycle of your bitterness and contempt and your loneliness and isolation and a lack of satisfaction and meaninglessness in your life? Now, experiencing higher states of consciousness does come with a cost, but letting go of unforgiveness or ungratefulness and conditional relationships is a price worth paying. When you consider the light and love that floods your soul as a result. And moving into, let's say, a fifth dimension, it really starts to change things for us. You know, one of the, probably one of the best definitions of just exactly what is fifth dimension actually came from a website, and it's placed on a scroll of remembrance. And I really like this because, again, it just illustrates that a fifth dimension or a third dimension or a fourth dimension and so forth is not a place. Okay. And it starts off, the fifth dimension isn't a place. It's a frequency. You don't reach it with a spaceship. You enter it with your heart. It begins when separation dissolves and you remember all is connected and that you are connected to all things and everyone. It's where time bends, you know, thought becomes creation, and love is no longer just a feeling. It's the very fabric of reality. And you don't force your way into fifth dimension. You align with it through presence, through joy, through love, through gratitude, through surrender. So in other words, you don't escape the world. You see through it. The fifth dimension isn't above you. It's within you. I like that. I like that. I just need to Google what is fifth dimension and then a scroll of remembrance and it'll come right up. Okay. But also, you know, in fifth dimension consciousness, there is a sense, you know, that this separation that we might be feeling totally dissolves. And we do have this recognition that we are connected. We are connected to everyone, everyone. And unconditional love and compassion comes out of this as a result. It's characterized by unconditional love and forgiveness and acceptance and a deep respect for the divine in all forms of life. And there's also this tremendous transcendence of ego and fear. Because the journey to fifth dimension, let's just say, you know, from your heart, going in your heart, involves transcending the ego and its grip on the mind, which leads to a state of fearlessness. What's the fear? Who's the fear? And so forth, when we are all created equal. We are all connected. And there's also this manifestation through being. Because in fifth dimension, manifestation is not a struggle, you know, but it's about aligning with the flow of the universe, let's just say, you know, and manifesting through a state of being rather than doing. Well, let me give you a practical application that I've shared before of just what does this look like? What does this look like? You know, what does fifth dimension look like on, let's say, a Tuesday night or a Wednesday morning or a Saturday afternoon or a Sunday night and so forth? Well, how many of you out there have ever tied a braid? Okay. Have you ever tied a braid? You know, maybe you've braided ribbons for a little flair on packages or decorations, or maybe you've tied your hair in a braid or some other loose strands. Well, either way, we know that braiding something makes it strong because of the intertwining of the fibers or strands. Well, if you ever go into a hardware store and you ever want to buy some, let's say, simple, basic, run-of-the-mill clothesline rope, you know, and of course, you go down the aisle where they have rope and all kinds of thickness and lengths and so forth. You know, and you stop and you look at some of the heavier and the thicker ropes that they have there. And whenever I've done that, I've discovered that the strength of the rope was actually in the weaving or the braiding of other pieces of rope, which of course has made it very, very strong. And we can apply this same analogy, or let's even turn it into a metaphor in our lives, especially when it comes to forgiveness and gratitude. You know, most of the time, society wants to treat these themes as separate and individual. But that's third dimensional thinking. But when it comes to integrating our spirituality and our mental health, forgiveness and gratitude can never be separated. Just like we can never be separated from one another. That's fifth dimensional thinking. Now, granted, we could try to make this out to be, okay, which came first here? Is it the chicken? Is it the egg? And turn it into a big dilemma. But, you know, in all actuality, I've never met a person who didn't express gratitude in their lives and everything that they do and say without also having forgiveness in their heart. You know, forgiveness and gratitude go hand in hand, just like peanut butter and jelly or peas and carrots. Okay, because, you know, whenever we have both forgiveness and gratitude, it opens up the heart like nothing else in our lives and allows the authentic love of self and others to emerge. So exactly how do we go about cultivating forgiveness and gratitude and love in fifth dimension? Well, you begin with often the most very difficult people that you may ever encounter in this life, your family, which brings us back to Thanksgiving. Okay. Forgiveness and gratitude must begin with our families because this is often where we've experienced some of the most pain and hurt in our lives. Okay. It's not that we want to label our families as evil, but I mean, that's the experience that we had. These are the people that we just first gave us an indication of what the world's like. You know, the psychological, the emotional, the physical, even spiritual pain that also might be associated. And we have to begin with our family of origin issues, because these are the first people who gave us a sense of how the world works, just like I said. But how about we just expand that definition of family, you know, to include not just our immediate and extended family members, but how about also the family members who have gone on before us, as well as those who will come after us? Well, the family systems theorist Murray Bowen back in 93, he suggested that a person cannot be fully understood in isolation. You know, that is apart from the greater context of one's family or one's community or one's culture and the world. Okay, we grow up, you know, with family, community, culture, the world. That's a context. However, within these larger systems, people struggle to differentiate themselves and to be guided by their own thoughts and feelings and actions, because people want to be independent. They want to make up their own minds. They want to have their own decisions. I get that. You know, but also, in other words, you know, although individuals desire to think and live for themselves, you know, developing creative and critical thinking skills, just to name a few, they're often drawn back into the prevailing and often codependent emotional patterns that characterize their families, their culture, societies, so on and so forth. Because families, cultures, societies have a very strong pull to bring people back into its dysfunction or its toxicity. But, you know, still, if we're honest with ourselves, we may live in part of a world where society's definition of this differentiation really turns out to be a mixed message. You see, on one hand, differentiation is often taken to the extreme, as we're told to, you better look out for number one. Be an individual. Walk to the beat of your own drum, even at the expense of others, if necessary. That's third dimension thinking. Yet other times, we also can, you know, be expected to go with the flow, don't make any waves, and fall in line with the status quo. That's also third dimensional thinking. And if these mixed messages are confusing, you're not alone. All we have to do is examine the history of systems, let's just say, in order to understand the violent and oppressive patterns against people who do not conform to such wishes. Pick any century, and you will be inundated with examples after examples after examples of what society does to people who do not conform. But, you know, whenever we think of, let's say, ancestral healing, you know, how do we heal those who have gone on before us? How do we heal ourselves so we don't pass that toxicity and that pain and destruction and that third dimensional thinking on to those who are going to come after us? We might be hesitant to begin this process because, if truth be told, we just still might be holding on to a tremendous amount of bitterness and rage and contempt against those who committed physical, emotional, sexual abuse, let's just say, against us or our families. In fact, as we may flip through our family albums, we may discover that they're not always filled with pleasant memories. Instead, you know, the pages just might be filled with more memories of abuse and control and oppression and cruelty. But nevertheless, when we realize that we can be the transitional generation that no longer has to carry such wounds, and that we are willing to work through our third dimensional wounds and pain and transform that third dimensional lower level thinking and shift into, say, a fifth dimensional higher vibrational energy. Well, when we're able to do that and we see ourselves as this transitional generation, kind of interestingly, our ancestors will no longer have to carry them either. You know, because time, space doesn't exist in higher levels of, you know, dimensional awareness. Indeed, we all possess inner strengths and the resources and the gifts to make this happen. Yeah, it's true. Wounded people wound people. And intergenerational trauma attests to this. And yet, people who live their lives in forgiveness and gratitude and love transform generations. And discovering the power of your soul's voice is a tremendous catalyst for change, tremendous catalyst for transformation. Well, as I just mentioned, healing intergenerational trauma also carries with it a great deal of courage and responsibility, because we could just as easily dismiss its importance and passively accept the world in which we live. Yeah, let somebody else worry about it. But you know, the dysfunction of the social and political and religious and educational and the financial systems and so on and so forth of various degrees have not only been handed down to us, but they often serve to reinforce our distorted perceptions of each other. And these distortions in systems are so intertwined that it appears nothing happens in a vacuum, that all have had a hand in some way in creating and sustaining oppression or coercion or corruption down through the centuries. But you know, the beauty of all this is that whenever we embrace our soul consciousness and we transcend towards the realization of who we truly are, you know, we are unable to perpetuate the dysfunction that holds a distorted way of life together. Let me say that again. Whenever we embrace our soul consciousness and we are being transformed and we transcend toward this realization of who we truly are as a soul, we're going to be unable to perpetuate the dysfunction that holds a distorted way of life together. Because our thinking has changed, because we truly see things for what they are. Indeed, the interpersonal and the intrapersonal transformation is that powerful. Yet it's also worth noting that just like in any family systems, societal systems typically do not tolerate people, again, who do not maintain the status quo. In fact, once a system becomes powerful, you know, members will devalue and dismiss and destroy others in order to hang on to their power. So in other words, dysfunctional systems and the people involved simply cannot risk being authentic, because that makes them vulnerable to the truth, which then calls for a change in attitudes and behaviors. Well, one last story. Every August 10th, which is coming up almost a month to the day, you know, a little over, you know, 5 weeks, the village of Picaris Pueblo in New Mexico holds their harvest festival. And during the celebration, there are endless ceremonies commemorating the connection the people have with God, the creator and sustainer of life, the abundance from the land, and their love for their community. You know, there are religious services and there are foot races and indigenous drumming and singing and dances. And of course, people share meals together. Well, a while back, it was my first time attending this celebration. You know, and I was struck by, when I walked into the village, just this large 25, 30 foot wooden pole that was erected in the middle of the town. And on top of this pole, on this platform, was tied a sheep's carcass, a blanket, and a watermelon. And the elders explained to me that these items symbolize God's provision of food and clothing and the connection to the land. And kind of like a funny way, the culmination of this festival involved retrieval of these items by dancer clowns dressed in black and white. Now, apart from reminding the people of the importance of laughter and play as they work their way through the crowds, and the importance of laughter and play in ceremony, it really was the responsibility of these clowns to climb the pole and recover these items. And in good comedic fashion, these clowns would make several valiant attempts to climb the pole, you know, often swinging around from the ropes and standing on each other's shoulders and sliding down only to try again, much to the amusement and encouragement of the crowd. And they would be cheered on and so on and so forth, you know. And finally, after several attempts, one clown would reach the top as cheers erupted from the crowd below. And one by one, the items would be lowered and they would be received with joy. And as I sat there watching, I was reminded of the teaching that surrounded this ceremony, that unless these clowns retrieve these items every year, the people would die. Initially, you know, I kind of thought that what a strange teaching. After all, the community cannot just live off exclusively a watermelon, a sheep, and a blanket. Well, no sooner had I thought that than the meaning of the ceremony finally hit me. You know, failure to retrieve these items was not meant to be taken as a literal death, but rather it is what dies within the people as they live is what matters the most. Because apart from food and clothing and shelter, the real issues that we cannot afford to live without are hope, love, gratitude, inner peace, and grace. See, these virtues are the true life-giving gifts that nourish and sustain our soul that far exceeds material possessions. Because ceremonies and rituals contain deeper levels of meaning, succeeding generations need to learn the relevance the ceremonies have for them to live in their soul consciousness and from a place of forgiveness, gratitude, and love. And I have to tell you, firsthand experience, when these three seeds have been planted in your heart, nothing is ever going to be taken for granted in this life. Not one breath, not one sip of water, nor the opportunity to bring healing from another person's life that's just filled with trauma. Everything and everyone are connected. I'm Dr. James Houck, and you've been listening to Reclaiming Authenticity. Thank you again for spending this hour with me. I really, really appreciate it. So leave me your thoughts about this particular show or other shows. I really enjoy reading the feedback from everybody. So in the meantime, the next 2 weeks, everybody be safe, everybody be careful, and everybody just have a very wonderful 4th of July. And just remember that alcohol and fireworks, not a good combination. All right. Everybody take care. God bless.
For an answer, or just to leave 1,000 comments, or prodding around to buy a book by Dr. Houck, it's all there. Just wander over to ReclaimingAuthenticity.com and click around. And we'll see you next Wednesday at 9 p.m. Eastern Time, 6 p.m. Pacific on BBS Radio TV.